Garnet on the 7th of November in his home at Castlemaine. Tommy, can you tell me how you first became interested in gardening?
Well, I don't think I can. I've always been interested in gardening. I made, before coming out here in 1961, I'd made about four or five gardens in England. I've always been interested in the history of gardens. We were where we lived, we were in the middle of, not far from Montacute House, and the garden, there were famous gardens all around us. And so that one of the things that I tried to do once was to get the Garden History Society to drop the H from its name, the history, because I didn't think there was enough history.
This was the English Garden History Society, was it? You're talking about the English Society?
No, I'm talking about the one out here.
Oh, yes, right.
I remember the beginning of this society when George Seddon presided over a meeting when the then head of the National Trust Gardens in Britain came out, and he told us of what the controversy at that time going on was about two green gardens, one at Dudley Royal, which is now on the World Heritage List in North, and at Starhead, which is not far away from us in Wiltshire. And the controversy was whether to remove all the rhododendrons from Starhead, which were a feature of the garden, but of course were much later than the green garden of the 18th century. And fortunately they didn't do that. And the only blot on the landscape at Studley Royal was a single copper beech that they've taken out. And it is now wholly a green garden. Do you know it?
No. Now, in England, you became very interested in gardening, did you, before you came to Australia?
Yeah. Yes. I'd been making gardens, but I was a headmaster in England, you see. I didn't have time, but I remember being interviewed before I retired from Jerome Grammar School and saying, I was asked what I was going to do, and I said, I'm going to make a garden. And that's what I did at St. Earth. But it was really, my first love was birds. I was secretary of the Royal Australasian Ornithology Union when I retired. And at the end of 1973. And so it was for 6 years I was there. And it was only then that I became interested in gardens. I can't remember which was which. I think the Garden History Society was started first, but later on, in the 150th anniversary of Victoria, I was on the garden, I think it was called the Environmental Committee, and top of our list was the rehabilitation of the botanic gardens in country of Victoria. And I got that job. And it was most successful, I think, of any of the jobs we did. And so I learned a good deal about gardens.
Is that when you first started to become interested in historic gardens?
I found Peter Watts, study of the historic gardens of Victoria. Well, he cheated twice by putting in Cruden Farm and Botherbeck. which weren't really historic gardens at all, but never mind. And I always regard this the start of the interest in gardening, and
The art of colonial gardening.
Yes.
The art of gardening in colonial Australia.
Which is our genre. In 1980, the then English editor of The Age thought that most writing about gardening wasn't very interesting, and asked round his office whether there was anyone who could do some writing. And a friend of my daughter's was a journalist there, and she suggested me. And so I wrote, and I became, my first article was a review of that. Yeah, and I've always considered that the start of the whole rejuvenation of gardening interest in Victoria.
Right. 1980 was the year that the society was formed.
Yes.
Why do you think that was a good year?
I can't remember why I thought of it. I'd met George Seddon. George Seddon had come up to our garden and walked in and said, "I'm George Seddon." And so I went to the foundation meeting and took part in the arguments there. And I was a member of the Garden History Society for something like 10 years. But we resigned from it because it seemed to me at that time to be becoming an upmarket garden visiting society. And we calculated it would have cost us $1,000 to go through all the meetings and dinners in Sydney, and so I then resigned. But meantime, I'd been asked to write the story of Alistair Clark of Glenara by a lady, I'm bad at names, his great aunt. No, his great niece. And she was then over 90, and I thought I was going to be writing a book about a breeder of daffodils and roses. But when I came, they'd kept every single bit of paper from right in the last century. I found that I wrote something quite separate. There was the breeding of it, roses and daffodils, it's true, but there was Alistair Clark was the second son, and the elder son was to have inherited, but he got financially embarrassed at the time of 1890, and couldn't take the property over, and Alistair had married a New Zealand girl from a family that had a lot of money, and Alistair's sister married an even more versatile person than Alistair Clark, a man called Sir Heaton Rhodes, or became Sir Heaton Rhodes, who lived to be well over 90 and had every position possible in New Zealand. And so I was involved in history then.
In the early days, when you first joined with George Seddon, did you go to the early meetings?
Yes, I went to meetings. I got a list of them. I went to Ballarat, which is where I just put forward a motion that the H should be dropped, because I hoped that the garden, the number of people who were involved in the gardening world, were, I thought, could take under their wing all the gardening societies, like the OPCCA, do you know that? The Ornamental Plants Conservation, of which I'm now patron. I was rather surprised when it was so comprehensively rolled. I was comprehensive at that meeting. And I still think that there is need for something to act as a lobby group for gardening, as you've got the National Farmers Federation acting for the farmers.
What do you think the purpose was intended to be at the beginning?
There was great controversy about conservation analyses. I was made guide to the group of English gardeners, including Christopher Lloyd and who's a woman at gardener, a very famous woman gardener. And I took them to the Western District, and they were much more interested in the Australian wildflowers than they were in the gardens that they saw. And then one of the visitors was an American lady who was on the committee, the international something like that, that had laid down that in conservation matters there should be a conservation analysis, which was all right for hard structures like buildings and everything like that. But I maintained that you couldn't have a conservation analysis of gardens, because as soon as you planted something, it changed the whole ecology of the area. And as it grew, I remember writing in an article and saying, what would you do if you were preserving St. Patrick's Cathedral in Melbourne, if the spire started to grow? And I know that the oak lawn at the Royal Botanic Gardens had used to be herbaceous borders. And so there were a number of garden designers at that time who were insistent upon conservation analyses.
And were they members of the society?
They were the influential people in the Garden History Society. So I went to Ballarat, Canberra, Adelaide, Tasmania, Albury, all the meetings of them, and I met a great number of gardeners, but as I say, it seemed to me to deteriorate. And I'm very glad that here now, that a whole party came up and working on a Kerr's cottage in Castlemaine, the old one that belonged. I was critical of the National Trust. I was on the Garden Committee of the National Trust, and I once had two gardeners from one of the Trust properties coming up and to St. Earth, and one of them broke down and wept them. I showed them times. I was given an anonymous penciled list of all the gardens that the National Trust had that they weren't doing anything about. And so I thought that the connection between the Garden Committee of the National Trust and the Garden History Society was rather close. And there was a lady called Penny Woodward, who'd been the National Trust advisor and who had been sacked. But she was very discreet about it, the reasons for it. But I know these two English people who've gone back to England because they were didn't believe in the insistence on conservation areas.
Yeah. Did you enjoy those trips to Ballarat and Canberra?
Yes, we saw a lot of gardens that way. Mm. And my wife now continues to go to gardens. One of the things that I've noticed I've only glanced at the garden history or the Oxford Companion to Garden History, is that it doesn't give credit enough to the man at the ABC and the first president of the garden opening scheme. When we first started opening a garden, people used to say, we couldn't do that. People would come and look in the windows and then come back and burgle the house. So there was quite a lot of opposition. And we were one of the first gardens that opened. And that's there. And now, of course, it is spread. And the president, the executive officer, is a former pupil of mine. Mm-hmm.
Were you active on the committee in the early days?
No, I never. Of course, in the early days, the proceedings of the society, there was a close symbiosis with a magazine and a man called Tim North, who lived in New South Wales. And for some reason, I've never known why, that broke down. There was a conflict of interest between those two, and it came to an end. But and so they had to start their own magazine. And what's the lady up at Cooma? She asked me to write for that magazine once or twice. But I've seen a great number of gardens.
And, you mentioned
haven't been down to Melbourne for 10 years now.
You mentioned George Seddon. How important was he to the society?
Oh, I think he was a considerable influence. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was, of course, he started the School of Environmental Sciences at Melbourne University, and he himself had started reading English at Melbourne University and had then turned to science. And his successor was an American whom I met too. But I don't think this should go on the record, but the American's wife was asked to invite you to come and look at the garden, and then she sent in a bill for it for her visit. But and George Seddon, his marriage broke up, and he married the administrator at Melbourne University, and then went over to the West. And I've seen a lot of him. Another factor in the early days was that Dick Hamer, he started a scheme for gardens of the year, municipal gardens and private gardens, and he used to have a presentation and gave a picture by an artist over in Mombauk, somewhere there. I can't remember his name. And that's how I first met George Seddon, who walked in one day and told me that our garden had received, an order of the Big Heath. Would I come down to the presentation? Well, I couldn't go, and I employed a girl at that time, age about 22, who went down on her boyfriend's pillion on a bicycle and was clad in jeans and found herself in the middle of all the old mares and I knew Pat Fuhrman, who was the chairman of the garden, what was he called, the Garden State Committee, and Cherry Chambers had been, and of course it wasn't, the Garden State Committee was not concerned so much with gardens as with improving the whole environment, and particularly the route between Melbourne and Sydney, and trying to make sure that there was nothing but indigenous Australian plants to be seen from the highway. And so I got involved with that. And then I never allowed the use of the word restoration of the gardens when I did that in the botanic gardens. We used the word rejuvenation all the time. And on one occasion, I remember, I saw the Shire secretary of a place who asked where it was, the garden. And he said, well, you know, I haven't been there for 4 years. And it had been very much neglected. And that's how I got involved with it. A lot of the history of the garden, there was a persistent view that any garden must have been designed either by Guilfoyle or what's the name of the professor, the botanic garden man, Muller.
Ferdinand.
And they're quite untrue in most cases. And the gardens weren't as they were originally.
Well, when the society started calling itself the Garden History Society, what did they regard as a historical garden?
I think it had to be, they used Peter Watts's definition. You know his book? Mm. Yeah, well, I think he used his definition. It had to be 20 years old or something like that. Mm-hmm. And of course, I've written the article in the Oxford book on gardens, and have said that gardens are a product of evolution like everything else, and trace the history of them.
By 1980, what were you doing in the gardening world?
I was making a garden from dirt. I've never had any training. But I subsequently became the only non-public servant on what was called the Garden Committee, because I kept on, had seen the people in what was then the Lands Department, about the botanic gardens and other gardens in the neighbourhood. And they set up a committee to look into the future of gardens in Victoria, and all the other members of the committee were public servants, and I was the only one who was non-public servant. That was in the 1980s, later on.
With the society, can you remember who else was an early member?
Oh, yes, the work. What's his name? Mike Tanner. Richard, the co-author of the.
Richard Aitken?
Yes. Mm-hmm. He was a little bit later. The influential people at the beginning were mostly from Sydney. There was a bit of the Melbourne-Sydney tension between.
And who were the Sydney ones?
Who had their name? I would remember them. If we would turn off for a moment, I'll go and get the young recent decade have been Rika Erickson, Beatrice Bly, Lionel Gilbert, James Broadbent, he was Sydney, Howard Tanner, another Sydney, Peter Watts, who was at the National Trust in Britain, in Victoria, and then went to New South Wales, John Foster, Anne Luttrell, who was my editor and who took over from me, Paul Fox, Trevor Nottle in South Australia, and Trisha Dixon, she's the one at Cooma. They're the people.
Did you have much to do with Elizabeth Murdoch?
Oh, I've known her for a long time. She used to say that her son Rupert could never resist the challenge. I was always opposed to the idea that Edna Walling was the only Australian garden designer. There were still about five books about her, and she, of course, was English, and she was dependent upon
Gertrude Jekyll?
Yes, who lived near, I knew her garden, and I knew a garden, again, quite close to it, called On the Hill, beginning with A. I've forgotten its name now.
How important was Elizabeth Murdoch for the society?
Oh, well, she I don't really. I think she was really important, probably, because she, I don't know how much money she provided, but that was where a lot of it. She was a person who turned to. Joan North Smith was another person I knew well, and I've got all her books, and And Jean Galbraith was another person whom I know. She wasn't a member of the society, or wasn't active in the society.
And why was Joan Law Smith important?
She wrote a number of books in her garden, Bollebeck, which she remade. It had belonged to one of the age people.
Was she very influential in the society? Was she busy in the society?
I think she was. When I came into National Trust rather than the society, I was so incensed about the conservation analyses that I persuaded the most influential gardeners I could think of, including Joan Law Smith, Elizabeth Murdoch, Mimi Ramsey, two, three or four others, to come and put the case to the chairman of the National Trust. So Joan Law Smith corresponded with Jean Galbraith a lot. Do you know that? Mm. So that Bullerbeck was the garden that Peter Watts thought was the best in the world. So I think it was influenced that way.
Is Bollebeck an important historic garden?
Well, it was remade by her. It had, like all gardens, it had been there before and then it modified. One of the things that points that I've made in this history of the gardens is that the first settlers to Australia were homesick, so that they made gardens that they were familiar with at home. And because there was a strong Indian connection, and the India was hot, and they were everybody went up to the hills in the hot weather. Well, they did the same thing in Australia, and they went up to the Blue Mountains and up to Macedon and up to the Adelaide Hills to make their gardens.
On the conservation analysis issue, were you the only one within the society who didn't approve of that?
There were plenty of other people who I think was why I was was put on this committee at the Botanic Gardens. I constantly went to the Botanic Gardens because I got a distinctive voice. And I remember my wife coming in and somebody saying, I must be there because they'd heard me. No, there were lots of people who agreed about the impossibility of restoring gardens.
Did the society resolve that issue in its
philosophy? I don't know.
Philosophy?
I don't know. I left it by then. I remember I was sent a history of the gardens, notable gardens in Adelaide. And asked me if I thought it had no connecting theme to it, and I told the person who written to me about it, and I think they never published it. I was also involved with starting up the collection of Aristocrat roses, because Susan Irvine lived not far away, and she came over and saw the roses, and then she found more than 50 sorts, and so I read yet another bit that I came across.
Mm. Do you think the society has been successful in the sense that it's made people aware of historic gardens?
I think it did, but my point was that when we found it was $1,000 to go to Sydney, I was at that time involved with the Guild of Gardeners, which is the ordinary jobbing gardeners around Melbourne, and who couldn't possibly afford to go to anything like that. So I thought it was a rather elitist group. But I think that the photograph, the picture that is reproduced in here, the arrival of the first primrose in Victoria, is a disaster, really, because it has turned people towards the exotic plants. And I've said that there was a time in the 70s when the growing of native plants became a political issue, really.
Did the society become interested in restoring or researching?
I think gradually it did. To begin with, it was all for box edges and things like that. And the Victorian gardens was a great thing. Mm. And I think that your first native gardens weren't much good because people didn't know how to grow them.
Did the society have an interest in gardens other than large English gardens, like cottage gardens or vegetable gardens, or just gardens that belonged to people who were not so wealthy?
Yes, they looked at some modern gardens. I remember around Albury we went to several who had only recently been created.
They would call them significant gardens now, I think.
They would be now, yes.
I was just wondering whether there was a broad range of members with different types of gardens, or whether it just was a group of people who were interested in large English historic gardens.
I think it was much more of that. I think the number of people who've been interested in gardens has always been very small. The Anna Trail put the Edna Walling and her, the Bachman whom she employed. And then the interesting gardens went round by word of mouth among this group of gardeners, most of whom were wealthy. Whereas in England, I remember one of the most memorable gardens was made by a railwoman in a little triangle between a road and a railway, where he had made, or they both of them had amazing gardens.
Is anything like that in the?
I don't know what I think there are now, but they're coming out for the wood now. The gardens are open to the public. There was a time after the war when everything was shut down during the war, and there was very little knowledge of gardens. And it was quite late in the 1960s that people started to become interested in gardens. But even now, we had a group of people from Bendigo Gap, and their instructor was saying that the trouble with the nurseries in Bendigo is they have such a narrow range of plants. And so I was involved with a nurseryman at one stage, where I wrote an article about the naming of the plants, which was hopeless. And I was told that some of the nurserymen on Dandenong area could have hung me, because I said that what they names they gave were mostly wrong.
Do you also remember a woman called Ellis Jeffrey?
Oh, yes. Yes, I do remember her. She was one of the people who... She was at the early meetings. She had a very good garden herself. Any others who moved?
Well, she would not have been a wealthy garden owner, would she?
Oh, no. No, and hers wasn't considered a historic garden. But she was knowledgeable, the German lady.
Sophie Dacher?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I used to, most of the early visits, I used to connect with Sophie and we'd go around the garden together.
Well, she would agree with you that it was very elitist.
Hmm. Mm.
But she enjoyed her tours very much.
Oh, yes, I'm sure she did. Mm.
Grace Fraser?
Well, I only met her at the golf club. I didn't know at that time that she had designed the gardens at Melbourne Airport. I didn't know her well.
Oh, I don't know. And Joan Anderson? Do you remember her?
Joan?
Anderson.
No, I don't remember her.
No. And David Yenkin?
Oh, David Yenkin I knew, because... he was an Elgin Ogumarian, and I admired what he'd done in far as architecture was concerned. And another person here who was in Castlemaine, and who was Trevor Nuttall, of course, I knew. And I remember him, he wrote to me here because he'd heard of me from what he called a local grand dame. What is her name? She's got a garden up there with very old plants in it. She's 92, I think, contemporary of Elizabeth Murdoch.
What way was David Yenkin important for the society?
I don't think he was at the beginning. Mm. I don't remember him at the early meetings. Mm-hmm. He must have come in later, I think.
And what about Professor Turner? Was he?
Oh, he was. Yes. And we came to Castlemaine because when he retired, he came to live here.
Oh,
wow. So we came, and I'd known his family. His daughter was married. They started the Conservation Volunteers in Ballarat. They're now divorced, but Sue Turner is still here, and she's very active, and she really was responsible for my latest book being published.
Was Professor Turner interested in the society?
I think he was probably in the society, but he retired by then, I think. Mm. He was always interested in gardens. Mm. And he co-edited a new edition of Lord. Do you know Lord? Book of, Trees and Shrubs for Australian Gardens. It's a very, very good book indeed. Mm. And he and the man who was assistant botanist at Botanic Gardens. I could remember his name.
Why did you enjoy going around gardens with Sophie Dacca?
Because she always had strong opinions. And she sent me her book, because she wrote a book about the man who came out here and rinsed algae.
Do you remember someone called Kitty Gahn? Kitty Gahn.
No.
She was a good friend of Alice Jeffrey.
Oh, was she? Some people I didn't know by name. I'm trying to think of the name of this person here. I think I might. My memory gets worse as I go along. No, ask me any more questions.
Just if you had any particular memories about those trips you went on to Ballarat or Tasmania?
Yes, I remember the one to Adelaide particularly. Mm. And Tasmania, we're going to the garden, the early gardens there.
And why do you remember the Tasmanian ones?
I think they were the oldest. I remember one hot place down in the south which still had all the defences against Aboriginals in place. And I brought back seeds of a blue pea from there, I remember. Mm-hmm. But we used to get a number of boys from Tasmania who came to Geelong Grammar School.
Mm-hmm. And what about the Adelaide trip? Why was that interesting?
Because one of the gardens we saw was at, in the hills was now a school, was then a school. And Trevor Nottle had his garden up there. There was a nurseryman who died later, Thompson, who there were a number of good gardens in the Adelaide Hills. And I used to get roses from Ross Roses, who were down on the coast.
Do you remember Professor Stern?
Oh, who wrote the book on botanical Latin?
Yes, I think he went to Adelaide, didn't he?
Did he? I know his book and I know of him, but more of his contribution in England than anything out here. Mm.
Did you go to any gardens in the Western District with the Society?
Oh, yes. Well, I don't know. I've been to Dalvoy and other places in the Western District. Tammy Fraser I knew. I knew him. Who's now president, isn't she? No, she's president of the garden, Open Garden Scheme.
And did you go to the Blue Mountains?
Yes.
With the Society?
Yes, I remember that particularly.
What was special about that trip?
Oh, I think they gained the age of the gardens. Who's the man who's written on plants in China? Well-known broadcaster too. He had his family garden was up there, and you often see the photograph of his summer house and rhododendrons all around it. He was a lecturer at Sydney University, I think. His garden was an edible one. John Patrick. Do you know John Patrick? he came out. Soon after we came, his wife wanted to go home, I know, go back to England. But John had a great, he was much better at speaking, he wasn't writing. I remember sending him back a copy of something he'd written for The Age. I forgot an editor. But he's now got onto the Garden TV programme. I'm not surprised.
And there was a trip to Canberra that some people enjoyed very much. Did you go on that one?
Yes, we went up to Michelgo or somewhere like that. Isn't that what it's called? I remember that, and I'd been going to the botanic gardens. I knew the man who designed, who planted most of the trees around Canberra, who was I forget what his name is. He's still alive. He can't. Any more?
Oh, the Ballarat. Did you go to Ballarat with the society?
Yes, I went to Ballarat. Mm-hmm. What is that? The garden, the original Buninyong garden, I remember her, remember the wife died of a heart attack in Adelaide when she was on the Garden History tour. And the girl who did the illustrations from my first book, she came from Kyneton.
Do you think the society has been successful in what it intended to do?
I can't really tell. I think that the interest in gardens has grown enormously. Cortigas Seeds, Clive Brady, not much of a gardener, but he's a very good publicist. He's done a lot for encouraging people to garden.
But he wouldn't be involved with the society, would he?
I think he probably gave it. Since I left, as I say, I 10 years since I've been down to Melbourne, and I've lost touch with what has happened, politics, particularly. I for a long time, I advocated that the Dandenong's gardens should be the hillside gardens of the botanic garden, the rhododendron garden, and the old lady who has a garden up there, and the number of gardens up there.
So you really disagreed with the original purpose and philosophy, is that right?
No, I didn't. I agreed with it. It was a pity that I liked the botanic gardens, that they had been allowed to degenerate so much. And I was all in favour of rejuvenation of the gardens. But as I say, I don't think that there's been a great deal of history in the gardens in Australia compared with Europe and England.
You don't think the society has helped?
Oh, I think it has. I think all the societies that have encouraged gardening. But I think on the whole, Australians are better at going to conferences and watching things than they are doing things. And that's why I was glad that the group has come up and working on Kerr's Cottage. The present secretary of the society is connected with the man who started who were one of the first people to grow native plants in Geelong. Do you remember his name?
No. The current president is a woman called Helen Page.
Yes, well, she, Helen Page, was, I thought she was the sister of the man, a younger man who collected a great number of native plants in Western Australia. I used to get my plants from him. They were all then grown in beer cans, and they were difficult to get out. She done a great deal for the Gardens History Society, I think, and she activated it.
Well, in Australia's perspective, we wouldn't have gardens which are older than 200 years, would we, at the most?
No, well, that's what I've said. And what, in this article, I've said, what's 200 years compared with 5,000 years for the Chinese gardens?
But it's all relative, isn't it? To Australia, a 200-year-old garden is old.
But they're nearly all reminiscent of home, as they called it then.
Of what?
Of England, which they called home.
Oh, home, yes. The homesickness business. Yes. How do you
think? There's been a lot of talk about trying to get an Australian style of gardening. I think it's nonsense because the climate and soil and it's such a big area that you can't ever have an Australian style.
No.
And I think in the early days, the society didn't realise it. I was given an OAM, not studying to do education, but because I produced a book on the various climates of the different parts of Australia. Mm. I mean, people forget that on the New England tableland, they get the rain in the winter. They get the rain in the summer, and they get that they get hard frosts, and you think the books that are written about Sydney gardening are useless in Victoria, and vice versa, because of the different climatic conditions.
Well, do you think there is a place for the Garden History Society now in Victoria?
Well, I'd still like to see it drop history. And I think it's very much a place for an overall garden society, like the Royal Horticultural Society in Britain, which has a million members and all sorts of small gardeners to big gardeners.
And what would such a society do? What would its main...
It has shows, it introduces new plants,
What would its purpose be?
Its purpose is to publicise gardening. And to bring together a number of people who are interested in gardens for various reasons.
Did you ever give lectures to the History Society?
I wrote for them for some number of articles for them. I don't think I can't remember lecturing to the society. I've been more concerned with the OPCCA, the Ornamental Plants Conservation Committee. I'd love to see a garden which somebody working on the date of introduction of all the new plants that came to Australia. One at Cambridge University, you've got a border with the date of introduction and the plants showing. A lot of our plants, like jacarandas, came from Brazil because the sailing ships went over there, picked them up and came over. And then not a lot of South Africans because they came, called into Cape Town. That side of history I'd like to see more developed.
Mm-hmm. That's something that George Seddon is interested in, isn't it?
Yes. Mm-hmm. George Seddon, I remember last time he came here, he said, you and I have got much more in common than just gardens. He launched my latest book, which was a selection of articles that I wrote for The Age.
Going back to the start of the society, why do you think it started off in that, with that purpose?
It was because of Peter Watts' work at the National Trust and his survey of the historic gardens of Victoria.
And why do you think it became the kind of society that was regarded as rather elitist?
Well, it met its large house in Jurac. First, it initially began there, and a lot of the people who had big gardens came and so it spread.
Do you think it has a healthy future?
I think I see it claims to cover everything, but it doesn't. I mean, it has the money, but I think you could take more responsibility for the ordinary gardeners. I managed to persuade a man who wrote a book, who'd been a jobbing gardener in one of the northeastern suburbs, and he'd been to five different employers in the 1920s, which is very little about that in the garden, either before the First War or recently. But he was a jobbing gardener who described the various owners of the garden very well. But they couldn't get it published. And then I persuaded somebody to publish it, and it was published just before he died, so he did date it. But I think the Garden History Society, the wider its influence can be, and the more money it can give to other societies or take them under their wing, the better.
Thank you.
I didn't get enough.